Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 8:34 Central African time. Alhamdulillah, consciously connected, keeping your company. Boniface on the board. Hey, how you like that, Boniface? Boniface on the board, B-O-B. Yeah, and he's doing a brilliant job this morning. And at that time of the morning, where we join our very own Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, Member of Parliament. And yes, we have renamed the segment Parliamentary Tunes with Ahmad. He is the leader of the NFP also. Ahmad, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. The Koi and San people, hey, they want to make you president of all presidents, Ahmad. And assalamu alaikum, how are you doing this beautiful morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, lots of rain overnight, early hours of this morning. Very cold morning in Cape Town, but it appears to be clearing up. 14 further deaths reported in the last 24 hours, with just over 4,000 new infections, 4,074. There are currently just under 49,000 people that are positive in the country, if the statistics is anything to go by. But there's concerns now being raised on the monkeypox, you know, particularly if you look in some of the African countries, like Nigeria and the CAR and Cameroon, there have been 1,405 new reportings with 62 deaths. And that experts in the continent, you know, are raising serious concerns about that. Well, the ad hoc committee is busy with its oversight, inspecting the areas that were affected, the devastated floods. And we'll get a report on that shortly. Like we said, a lot of money seems to be going on either administration or to protect the money that you haven't got to spend yet anyway. So far with that 350 rand social assistance grant, do not have enough money to cater for all those that they're intending to provide it for. There's some concerns being raised, and people in the communities, Brother Shafat, are raising concerns about SAUK. And, you know, our brothers and sisters that go on this pilgrimage for Hajj and things, and they're raising some serious concerns about this. So that matter is starting to gain some momentum, just as the political situation in Pakistan also on the issue of Imran Khan, and there are concerns being raised that the military is not coming to the rescue. They are compromised there. But the situation is in chaotic in Pakistan, and this can either, you know, go either way. One of it is can be that it is good, and you could see the people and the masses particularly are in support for change. They want an election. Government is trying to prevent that, and this can have devastating effects on them should they decide not to have election soon. It will affect the economy a lot, and this could... Their debt, of course, is quite high, and that could be of dire consequences for them. Another matter for concern locally is, you know, the SAPC S13, the part where you get keep all your exhibits and things. And time again, countrywide, there are concerns being raised that the exhibits itself go missing, whether it is firearm, whether it is, I mean, you've had the case in Durban, where cocaine was found, and suddenly they said it was spices and things like that. So there's a whole lot that's going on as far as the South African Police Service goes. So, you know, I think the South African Police Service needs an absolute cleanup. How you're going to do that is the question that I think we need to ask. It's not going to be an easy one, because the criminals have infiltrated the criminal justice system in this country, whether you talk about the police, you talk about the judiciary, the correctional facilities. So, you know, it's not going to be easy. And if you look at the system we're following with recruiting as well, you're not recruiting people that are passionate, that are committed and dedicated, and more importantly, those that have been in the force for a long time with the necessary skills and experience. They're leaving the force. Either they're going into the private sector, opening up their own security companies, or leaving the country because, you know, they are not getting their due promotions and things. They've been overlooked for junior counterparts. So that's demotivating them as well. So really, I think the law enforcement, the South African Police Services, has got a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmed. And it's a very sad situation indeed, where your, you know, law enforcement is compromised, and there are large drug hauls of cocaine consignments coming from into the Durban Harbour and moving through. And we just hear, we just read the headlines, and after that, it turns out to be chili powder or garam masala. But something's happening somewhere, Ahmed. And as you said, the SAPS needs a clean out right from top to bottom. And, who does the recruiting then? Because the type of people that are recruiting these people are accomplices themselves, Ahmed.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But over and above that, you put an ad looking for 10,000 police officers, trainees, and with the high unemployment rate in the country, anybody and everybody is going to apply for those posts, And that is why I feel, things like nursing and policing, you need to include it in your curriculum at school. So you get people that will that have an interest in that field are the ones who will take those subjects that are offered or the curriculum that is offered to take them in that direction. Otherwise, anybody and everybody is going to apply. And there is not enough systems in place to monitor them. Lifestyle audits on an ongoing process. That's the other problem you got. Because many of them come into the force with good intentions as well. They want a job and they come in. But it's just a matter of time they're absorbed by these criminals. Now, there are different reasons why they get absorbed by these criminals. I mean, one, it could be greed and selfishness. The other one could be that they're also afraid, and that is why you need that rotational system. You should not leave a police officer too long in a particular police station, because then you familiarize yourself with the criminals in those areas. And you'd find often that the detectives assigned to that particular station will be dealing with the same criminals all the time. You will arrest those criminals. I'll give you an example for drugs. The matter will go to court. It'll be and dealt with. Then you'll come back. You'll be, if that guy is arrested again, you'll be, same detective is going to be dealing. So what you're doing, you're forming a kind of a relationship between the police officer and the criminals or the suspects in a way. So that is why it's good to rotate them. That will might be able to help. And that's the system they're supposed to implement. It's part of their policy, but they appear not to be doing that. I mean, you can't tell me, Barisha, that if you are stationed for 50 years, I give you the Chatsworth Police Station. Now, if you don't know the people in that area, and you've got the CPFs, you've got the neighborhood watches, you've got the security companies, you've got all these people, right? And if you don't know who the criminals are there, what are you basically telling us? That they are more sophisticated than you are. They've got all the skills you don't have, that they can conduct their business as normal in your presence, in full view of you and your entire community, and you can't deal with them. So then what's the purpose of that police station, to be honest with you? So it's only because of collusion, and that's why I raised the concern the other day. Is the CPF effective? Is the neighborhood watches effective? Because we spend money on them. And I can tell you, one of the provincial commissioners said to me, you are correct, Honorable Imam, they're not serving the intended purpose. But what it is creating is a form of dialogue, a communication between us and the people. And that's all we're achieving and nothing more. That's exactly what he said to me the other day. So, my observations appear to be correct. That with having these neighborhood watches and these policing forums, who are supposed to be the eyes and ears of the community, communicating with the law enforcement to eradicate crime, where are they? So what is next? Street committees, right? That's when you went. And then what? You'll have a committee every 2 doors and 3 doors. Is that what where you're heading for? Then what's the purpose of it? I mean, you're spending money on these institutions. And the people want these positions. You give it through to them. Now, I mean, you've got a CPF in an area, right? And each one of them got their own committees. So what are they actually doing, Brother Shepherd? Why is it women are still being raped and murdered and so much of gender-based violence, but you have a CPF, a neighborhood watch, you have social workers, you have everything going on there? That's because it's not effective.
Yeah, I'm looking at a message here. Ibrahim says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Manzoor. You also walk the talk. He says that you're talking about the CPF and our security in our suburbs. I can tell you the biggest problems are coming from the informal settlements. The children are running into the towns. The women are coming and begging on Thursdays. And also there's other types of unscrupulous characters that come from these areas that are peering over and looking to our yards. And at night, we are being compromised, security being stretched. There is no police patrolling in our areas. And furthermore, Ahmed, we are the people that go and feed them. And whilst we're feeding them, they're robbing us, they're stealing from our cars, and they're also stealing our kids' bicycles and so forth. Ahmed, this is a country where there is a no-no-win situation. Please advise accordingly. Shall I move or shall I stay? I don't know what to do. How do you respond to Ibrahim there, Ahmed?
Just, you can just see in the message that was sent, you can see the frustration of the brother there. You know, that he's put in a situation that he doesn't know what to do next. You've got the concern for your family, yourself, the future generations. Everything seems to be going wrong currently. And the law enforcement is not able to protect you, even though it's enshrined in the Constitution, that they will. It is their responsibility to provide a safe and secure environment. And then the question, do we really need the law enforcement? And why not just let everybody, with the money you're paying taxes that are paying for the law enforcement and the billions of rand we're spending, don't you think people should rather just pay and have securities in each area that can protect all its people? Maybe it's something else that we need to look at. But you can see the concerns that people are even wanting to consider leaving the country, and many of them are leaving the country. You'll be surprised, Brother Shaf, the high number of people that are leaving the country solely as a result of the security concerns that they have. Solely. And let me tell you, to leave one country and go and resettle in another country, leaving behind your family, your friends, your everything that you know, it's traumatic in itself. But people are left with no choice. I mean, if you look at it, every other day, Brother Shafat, you're hearing of some kidnapping. Every other day. And right now, as I talk to you in Cape Town, there's about half a dozen that I'm aware of right now. Every other day, and you speak to somebody, they're raising concern about somebody else that kidnapped. What is the law enforcement doing? If you look at the Shirin Yusuf, there is absolutely no news about her right now. Nothing. So is it really working? No. Now, can we all also leave the country and go elsewhere? No, we can't. We've also got to look at the impact of that decision that we take to want to leave the country. Sometimes you don't blame people for taking those. Many people go for better economic conditions and benefits. But I'm telling you, the number of people that are leaving just raising concerns about security aspects. So I can understand what the brother is saying. It's very difficult for me to advise the brother. But my suggestion would be, there is a problem. We need to come together, find like-minded people that have an interest in protecting our people and find a solution to it. Because how many of us are going to be able to leave the country and go and start a new life somewhere else, a completely new life? So I think it is time that I think people on the ground start rising. And like we've discussed before, Brother Shepherd, you need to hold. Remember, if you belong to a municipality like Itegwini in Durban, where you come from, it means that you must hold them responsible to provide a secure environment, because that's what you are paying for. And you need to hold them to account for it. If they do not do that, I say again, collectively, not a handful of people deciding not to pay because they'll walk all over you. Collectively, everybody must turn. Hold on, enough is enough. You want me to pay for water? Provide me the water. You want me to pay for electricity? Give me uninterrupted electricity and energy. You want me to pay for rates and taxes for a safety and security? If you look at some of the areas, you'll be shocked what rates people pay. But there's no security whatsoever. People are being robbed every other day in some of the business areas, like Morningside and many other areas. So what are you paying for?
Absolutely. You ask a very pertinent question. What are you paying for? Go and ask Cyril Ramaphosa that, and you say, I have a dream. I have a dream. I will see it in the next life, Ahmed. Talk to us about Cyril and his dreams.
Brother Chaput, he's agreed to a meeting with us, members of opposition parties, and he's given us a date to meet us on Thursday. And a lot of matters are going to be raised. I know I'm going to be raising a lot of things at the moment about the state of the country, the high levels of kidnapping and the high crime rate in the country. Every department has got problems that is failing us. I'm going to raise concerns about KwaZulu-Natal and where we find ourselves as a result of the flood, but not necessarily as a flooding, but because we were not prepared for it, the poor infrastructure we've got. They're an ideal example. Out of the 22 municipalities in Northwest, I think there's only 4 or 5 that are functional. And he thinks his business as usual with his promises and his dreams that he's providing us. How are you going to change it? How are you going to correct it? Because, you know, telling us is one thing, doing something about it is something else. There's an ideal example. You're bringing the secretary to parliament. You want to appoint somebody who earns 4.6 million. He's applied for a job that was offering 2.4 million. Do you know anybody who's willing to take a 2 million or 2.2 million rand fall? There it is. You know, this thing of cater deployment that he speaks about that he will stop, he can't stop. He can't. He's not going to be able to. The fact of the matter is South Africa is a failed state at the moment. It's a failed state. We're going nowhere. It's a journey to nowhere. That's the fact of the matter. And the solution is not going to come from the current electoral system or from the ANC as a whole. Now, I don't only want to blame the ANC because many parties, wherever they govern, are doing exactly the same thing. But it means that there needs to be an overhaul of the entire electoral system. Maybe, Brother Shepherd, this political party system should be scrapped. Let the community, the people, elect their leaders themselves. Let us elect the president of the country ourselves, you know, so that you can elect your public representatives and let that public representatives put a government together. So in that way, you're not going to have somebody like the ANC walking all over you because they've got the majority and things. And you won't have political parties that are also smaller parties, that bigger parties use you to form coalitions, and you fall into the trap because of selfishness and greed and forget your mandate of the people. So maybe the entire system needs a relook into the country. Otherwise, we really are heading nowhere. There's no doubt about it, I can tell you.
No, absolutely. Then also, you know, I'm looking at another message here, and it's from EB. EB says, Assalamu alaikum, Chef. I'm really enjoying your friend, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, MP. I want to tell him that I have my kids that are living in another province. It is also, as for me and my wife, very traumatic to have kids leave the home and to find job at other places, and we worry for them 24/7. Ahmed, even moving to another country, as you say, is very traumatic. Our children leaving us is so traumatic for us. Ahmed, how do you respond to EB?
I can understand. You know, I live between Cape Town and Durban at the moment. I mean, I miss Mike. And the thing is this, remember, Brother Shafford, we never grew up like that. We grew up together. Families lived together. In fact, it was common that all their brothers and their wives and children all lived in one yard. We didn't know about one moving to another province or another, let alone another country. And I can understand. And with what you read on the media every day, what you see, the number of people that you know that are affected, that, you know, the psychological effect, you can't try. You currently, you are not able to live a normal life. I go back to the statement of our late brother Hassan Hawa, you can't play normal sport in an abnormal society. Right now, we're living in an abnormal society. How do you live a normal life? You can't. You have to worry about these things every single day. Are they safe? Are they secure? What are they doing? You don't know what to expect next in the country. That's how difficult it is for our brothers and sisters in this country. And do you see light at the end of the tunnel? I don't. Can the crime rate get any better? No, it can't. It's getting progressively worse. In order to deal with the rate of crime, you need to deal with the contributing factors, like the socioeconomic condition, the high unemployment rate, the living conditions of the people, lack of proper roads and electricity, where police will tell you they can't even drive in there because there's no roads to drive in between these informal settlements. So you need to look at the whole lot, you know, your porous borders, how drugs are coming in, your influx of foreigners, undocumented. You can see there's a whole host of contributing factors to where we are. Are we planning to address them? You can't address them in isolation. You need to deal with them holistically, and we're not doing that. So you can't find a solution unless... Now, in order to... The first step for you to want to solve a solution to that is to accept that there's a problem. And government does not want to accept that the problem. They think it's business as usual. The president will come there and forget about what is happening, and what is happening is going to give you another dream. That's all he's going to do. Because politicians have mastered the art of telling people what they want to hear. That's what it is all about. So it's not going to change anytime soon. So I understand what that brother is going through. I mean, can you imagine you have your children, they grew up with you, next thing they all have to leave to go and work somewhere far away. You'll see them occasionally and things like that. Is that what life was all about? It wasn't. We grew up together. You know,
no, I'm giving you 100 out of 100 for that. You put that beautifully. And, you know, you spoke about the extended family. We all lived together, played in the same yard, and there was a unity. There's like the Ubuntu in the community. We didn't have to invent the word Ubuntu. It was there long ago. And then, you know, when it came to job opportunities, if a, you know, if an uncle or the grandfather worked at the printing press, and then he put his son there, and his son put his son there. And, you know, it was like the job ran in the family. And, you know, the bosses of that time will find that the Muslims are very astute, were very honest. And you say, all right, do you have another family member? And you found that whole family ran a printing press. Ahmed, your thoughts?
Yes, one ideal example is, I think, Van Dyke Carpets in Isipingo, in your area. I remember many members of my family, my uncles and things have worked there. One put the other there. But that is, you know, that is the trust and the confidence that they've had. And this is how these families, you know, articulated themselves, how they conducted themselves, the respect that they enjoyed by these owners. You don't get that today. Today, it's a risk for you to take anybody. If there's a person working there for you to take another family member there, you're putting yourself at risk because that's where the collusion starts. It was a norm those times and it worked, but it can't work today. Can you see how we've deviated, how we've moved from one extreme to the other? Something that worked before is not going to work anymore. Now you can't tell people to bring your uncle, your cousins and everybody and come because of the risk of what is actually happening. So, but I agree with you that, you know, that Ubuntu, that the way they lived, the extended families, you'll find them. It's not unusual that a particular family will have a whole lot of them, you know, in close proximity to each other or in the same yard, and they'll eat together, they'll visit each other. You were never hearing of people fighting each other, one insulting the other, one worrying about what that one is doing in their house. The life has moved from one extreme to the other currently. So, yeah, you know, the question we need to ask is, where are we heading to? What beautiful life we had. Even though we had very little, we had everything. Now you got everything, but you got nothing. So you can see the difference where we're heading. And it means that, and it can't get any better. You've got the Western influence on society. That is why, you know, some of the, you know, where is our culture? Where is our religion? Where is our tradition? If you look at what's happening today, it's not part of any culture. Particularly, let's talk about the African culture. In the African culture, children normally respect the elders. Where is it today when they violate your rights, raping, murdering, you know, doing all those things? It's not part of their culture, not part of their tradition. But that is what they are doing. That's the norm today. So we've lost direction, brother. So it's time to go back to the drawing board. It means you need to go back to your deen, your religion, your culture, your tradition. You need to go back. How are you going to go back when the Western influence pumping billions and trillions of rands into this Western civilization is drumming it into you day and night through your, you put on your TV, you're not seeing anything positive. Everything that you see is negative. You put your radio on, it's exactly the same thing. You read your media, it's exactly the same thing. So what is there to positive that you'd be able to even children as years, 3 years and 4 years and 5 years, what they see today, we've never had been able to do that, never.
Absolutely, as you said, you put on all these jali boxes, you'll see daru, cigarette, and promiscuity, and all these things. I'm looking at a message from Ghulam. He says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, you rock." And he says, "I want to know, Ahmed, during the time of apartheid, we had a police known as the ZP police, the Zulu police. And then you had in Indian areas, all the charos running their own policing system. And it was all run to the T. And then the bureaus were in charge of the entire nation. Why is it a failure now? Was that the Zulu police, the Indian police, a successful story? Or how would they say, call it? Brutal apartheid policy. Your thoughts on that, Ahmed? Ghulam making a powerful point here, Ahmed.
Yeah, indeed, Brother Ghulam. Thank you for that question. You know, first of all, you know, when a police officer was approaching your home and you saw a vehicle outside, I think you were in so much of fear because you knew what you were getting. Today, it's the other way around. Before you even arrive there, those criminals know who's coming. They got your parcel ready for you in any event. And so they know what vehicle you're coming, how many coming, the names of the people coming. They know everything. That's the first thing. Yeah, the ZP was actually the Zululand police. That was what set up because of the KZN thing we've had there. You've had the one of the reasons why a lot of, and up to now, I get a lot of complaints from the police officers that they are, when it comes, they've been victimized when it comes to promotions. I mean, some of them tell me they're there for 20 years and 30 years and they still are sergeants and, or warrant officers also, you know, and things like that. So they're not moving up the ladder. It's because of this affirmative action and things like that, where you are now have to put so many blacks instead of that. Now tell me, does it make sense to you to take a black officer and go and put him in a predominantly Indian area? Is it going to really work? It can't work. You understand? That's the thing we need to understand. So we had people previously, police officers also commanded the respect of the community, and over and above that, there was a lot of fear. And you've never had the level. You might have had an isolated case of corruption, but other than that, you've hardly had anything about corruption and things like that in the law enforcement. And there's no doubt about it that the police force or the Bura police, you call them at that stage, I want to tell you that they were functional, fully functional. And they took no nonsense, actually. They commanded a lot of respect and a lot of fear amongst the others because of the way they conducted themselves. So people were not necessarily going to just take a chance and do the wrong thing. And if you did, of course, you were dealt with accordingly. Now it's the other way around. You get protected from people at the highest level, even if you do the wrong thing. In fact, if you do the wrong thing, you got more protection. You do the right thing, you got very little protection. You become the victim. You know, an ideal example is, look at the national commissioner who was trying to do the right thing, and he's gone today. He's no more there. So so there's a whole host again of reasons why we are where we are. And you'll see the promotion. I mean, I know Phoenix, they've been complaining about that. There was commissioner, station commissioner was a black guy, but it's predominantly an Indian area. Now you need to understand the dynamics of that area and put somebody there, you know, that will be able to do justice to it. That's not the way it is working. And that is why a lot of these police officers just wait for their time to take their package, or they go into the private sector and things, because, you know, they're going to work and work and work and get nothing out of it. And the Indian officers in KZN during the protest fights that took place in July, they were victims of their own black colleagues. They were harassing and intimidating them. So you can see where we are heading to. There was a lot of control measures in place previously. We don't have that. We've lost all direction when it comes to that as well.
Yeah, so, Ahmed, time is running out. We have about a minute to go before we go for Jews a Day.
Okay.
And you remember you spoke about that Russo, that having that soup and that cleared everything out. And a sister, and I told you King Clip, actually it was King Soup. And she sent me a correction and said, Brother Shafat, it's King Soup. Ahmed, your parting words this morning?
Yeah, I was, coincidentally, I was at the Koyan Sani at a cultural event. They appointed me as one of the high commissioners, and it was pouring, and I said, as if there's anything I feel for now is a nightmare, because it's to rain at daytime. But again, you know, those were the things, that King Soup that we used to have, and think we'll get it today. Even if they make it, it's not the way it is. But after, I just want to say to Evan, I'm not sure, Shafat, where this monkeypox thing is coming, but it seems to be on the rise. Although it hasn't hit the shores of South Africa yet, and we don't know what to expect, you know, New World Order, One World Order, what is going on, we really don't know what to expect. There's a lot of escalation on the ground. Some of it could be true, we don't know. People must just be a little bit careful about that. And, you know, this week the petrol price is going up. So, you know, it's going to affect your pockets, it's going to affect your standard of living. But again, I want to say, Brother Shaf, the last thing is this, please be careful about the movements of our children, of our daughters and wives that are driving around with these groceries and going shopping and things, because there are criminal inmates here, you know, victims. We need to be careful about that.
Jazakallah khair, Ahmed. You have a mashallah and a blessed day ahead. I'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Yes, our apologies there for some crackling coming through on the line now, but you know, that's part of our live broadcasting.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.